I discovered Pat Metheny when I was just beginning to learn about jazz. I'd heard he was one of the great jazz guitarists, but everything I heard by him seemed to defy my ideas of both those musical terms. His guitar often sounded nothing like a guitar, but like some kind of synthesized trumpet or harmonica. And the music sounded nothing like classic jazz, but like a quilt of sounds from across time and genre. The more I explored his career, the more my expectations were defied. One album seemed to be straight noise music, another was a dreamy soundtrack to an 80s Sean Penn spy film, another was a sweeping majestic orchestral album, and yet another was an ensemble of mechanical instruments which Metheny seemed to direct with his guitar. Metheny's an innovator, and he explores technology through composition. He's also a master guitarist, a virtuoso able to play with both blazing dexterity and great sensitivity. I've found that in the past, most people have focused on the virtuoso aspect of his work. People like flashy, fancy activities by a specialist, and Metheny was certainly a rare prodigy. He studied music for only a few months at college before he was asked to become a teacher. He released his first album, Bright Size Life, at 21, and it has since become regarded as one of the most significant jazz records of all time, one that established a new direction for the guitar and for the sound of the contemporary trio. But unlike many prodigies, Metheny spent the rest of his career actively expanding his scope as a musician. He's won 20 Grammys at this point, which is an absurd number, and he's the only artist to win in 10 separate categories. For a musician who plays such melodically and rhythmically rich music, his career has somehow had the trajectory of a pop star. In the 80s and 90s, the Pat Metheny Group could sell out stadiums in Europe, playing 10-minute ethereal fusion instrumentals. But people seem to treat them like some kind of arena rock band. Even now, he seems shocked by that reception. Since then, his popularity has naturally waxed and waned over the years, as it does for everyone. In my circles, Metheny was never considered part of cool trends, which was part of the reason I was attracted to his music. It seemed to live outside of the boundaries of my community's taste. Nobody knew what to make of it. I spoke to Metheny over the phone for the release of his newest album, Road to the Sun, which is yet another twist in his body of work. The first track on this album, which you're about to hear, is one of the more harmonically, chromatically dense pieces of music I've ever heard by him. This piece is performed by a classical guitar quartet, and the compositions have the kind of sharp expressivity of Ligeti or Shostakovich, one of his most beloved composers. Metheny is still transcending his own limits, now well into the late period of his career. As a listener, I can hear him doing this, because even after living with his music for years, I still feel the pleasure of surprise with every new release. You said before that at this point in your musical training, you almost don't need the music anymore, that you've kind of gone beyond it. Can you say a bit more about what you mean by that?
Yeah, I would say that's kind of a later in life realization. In lots of ways, I would say that I start to notice as time goes on that music itself has been an incredible teacher for me in that, you know, I mean, like a lot of people who get interested in music at a young age, it absolutely overtook every other aspect of my life in the early going. By that, I mean, you know, I got interested, you know, seriously interested in music, I guess probably sixth and seventh grade. And from then on, I never took a book home. I mean, I was like, you know, I don't want to say illiterate, but at least uneducated in a conventional way after like about a sixth grade level, and somehow managed to fake my way through the most minimal possible levels of education to finally get a mercy graduation from my high school. But, you know, through music, I kind of had to learn about history and science and math and, you know, everything else that you know, has kind of, you know, allowed me to function in our world, you know, not necessarily at a super high level, but at a level of, you know, basic competence anyway. But I, you know, I have to say that the kinds of things that, you know, I literally was able to understand about kind of the world in general through music were, and still are, kind of infinitely interesting and appealing. And as time has gone on, I'm starting to see it from a slightly different angle. And I think this is going more to the question you're asking, which is, it's seeming more and more to me that music is kind of an indication of something, or it's a symptom of something. And, you know, that what that something is still just as mysterious now for me as ever. And, but the main benefit, I think, is turning out to be something that goes beyond the specifics of, like, you know, these are the notes that fit on this chord, and, you know, you want to make sure you're not rushing and you're not dragging and you want to sound good. All those kinds of things, you know, end up being like incredible lessons that seem to lead to something that goes beyond just what music is to sort of what it really is. And, you know, at somewhere around that point in the conversation, it's a little bit like the point in the conversation where, you know, a neuroscientist has to define what consciousness is, or a musician has to define what soul is. I mean, there is a certain point where it's like, okay, I can't, I don't really think there is a language to go too far beyond, you know, where we're at right now in this conversation. But it's sort of this thing that has always been kind of off in the, like, every now and then I would get a glimmer of something kind of off in the side, you know, or somewhere unexpected inside the music, or on a particular night, or with a, you know, a particular audience, or a particular drummer, or, you know, there have been these points along the way where it's almost like, you know, there was a little crack in the universe or something, and I've gotten these little glimpses of what is really going on there. And, you know, music itself is something that is so absolutely unique in our physical, you know, experience here. You know, you can't smell it, you can't taste it, you can't touch it, can't see it. But when you walk into a room and there's some people who can really play, who are playing, there is no mistaking that there's something going on there. And, you know, that thing too is a much more overt, common aspect of what music is, because there's lots of great music and lots of great musicians of all kinds. And they're, I think they're, you know, probably, you know, have been for a good chunk of human history, some people who kind of functioned in that realm. But the interesting thing, it, for me, more and more, is that I think I may have felt like there was a destination somehow that had a specific musical result to be found at the end. And I'm kind of now rethinking that a little bit.
It almost sounds like you're talking about, you know, the great unknown or this larger unification concept that might be at the end of all disciplines, right? At the end of science and math and the arts. But you can use any kind of field of study and perhaps maybe you'll end up at this same kind of place.
Having the main aspect of my, you know, job description being that of, you know, someone who has to get up and play every night as an improvising musician, where that's kind of the main quality that is required, is to be able to live in that moment, you know, in a uniquely effective manner, night after night after night, set after set after set after set, and always be able to kind of get there. You know, that's how I would characterize my fellow musicians in this general area. It's people who can do that. They can consistently do whatever needs to be done to get to the spot that they can tell a story about whatever it is that their thing is in an almost unlimited kind of way. That sort of does require a kind of maybe awareness isn't the right word, or sensitivity to some of these kinds of issues in ways that are really interesting and incredibly educational. You know, it's like, I think that the whole thing of paying attention, I mean, because that's really what it is. I kind of talk about it in under the auspices of listening, but it's listening, but it's sort of, you know, really paying attention to what's happening. And, you know, that's, you know, when you think about like the Miles Quintet, you know, like that's like the maximum amount of paying attention that maybe has ever occurred on the planet, you know, in history, you know, between those five guys, you know, and it's, you know, and at the same time, you can find that quality of genuine attention in a lot of music. And, you know, I would say improvisers are kind of mandated to do that in ways that, you know, you can maybe slide on a little bit in some other musical disciplines.
You're talking about this kind of attention to your environment for improvising. And I think there's also this kind of internal attention that needs to be paid when you're making music to, you know, you think of music as being this external thing, but it's of course also an internal thing. It's there's a music in your head that has no sound. There's no external stimulus for this sound, but it still exists. And you know, you've said that you told me that you can play 25% of what you hear in your head, and that it used to be about 10%. And that seems so wild to me, for especially for someone like you. And I'm curious what you think this other 75% of music in your head is. Is it unplayable? You know, what makes it impossible to transpose?
You know, I've always kind of, I've used this analogy lots of times, that when you have these ideas, you know, and which I think everybody does, but you know, you're hearing something in your head and, you know, you want to be a musician, you want to be able to represent, you know, as closely as you can what you're hearing or what you're imagining you might be able to do as a musician. I mean, if you were to compare it to like archaeology, You know, there's like, you know, so there's a incredibly delicate, you know, remnant of a, you know, vertebrae of some, you know, long extinct dinosaur in the, you know, out in the, you know, you know, the valley up in North Dakota where there's all that stuff. Basically, what you need is, first of all, the ability to locate it. And then you need these incredibly fine tools to get it out without breaking it, because it's so, like, it's almost dust. And just the, you know, the tiniest wrong move, it's just going to turn into dust. So you have to have this, you know, like, super developed sense of touch to be able to extract that without just breaking it. And, you know, those two, let's just stop right there. Those two things on a musical level, to be able to locate something and then be able to kind of, you know, bring it into, you know, into earshot, let's say, is that's where the 75% is the limitations of, in my case, you know, just skill to be able to do that. And at the same time, you know, where it is a little bit different than a physical extraction, the tool that you're kind of going to rely on to be able to extract that, you know, idea from wherever it is, you know, being beamed from outer space or whatever it is something that that you can develop, you know. And I mean, I can really say just how incredibly gratifying it is for me to be able to get stuff now with a regularity and you know, a level of success like every single time that I just could not get to before. And that comes from, you know, all the things that, you know, have added up to the life that I've led as a musician, of getting to be around great other musicians, especially that, and, you know, practicing a lot, developing, you know, facility on an instrument or my ear, or, you know, ability to define what that thing is I'm hearing relative to a bunch of pitches on a keyboard or whatever. So, you know, it's kind of like a muscle that you can develop. And I suppose there are some limits to, you know, your abilities. You know, we're all born with a certain amount of, you know, whatever, you know, talent or however you want to define it, to do this or to do that or to do the other thing, you know. And even that, I feel like, can be, you know, really explored in ways that a lot of people maybe don't allow themselves the time required needed to develop.
What do you mean by that last part? What do you have limits in this way that you feel you have to explore and challenge?
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, I'm very realistic about you know, lots of things having to do with you know, kind of strengths and weaknesses and you know, in my own musical aspirations, you know. And I would say that being realistic about where your thing is at is a very important component in, you know, your ability to develop your archaeological extraction mechanisms. You know, I think there are a lot of musicians who they're not even quite aware of where their strengths and weaknesses are. And that can be particularly disorienting if you happen to be extremely talented. And I mean, you know, I've known a bunch of like ridiculously talented people that in many, many, I would almost say most cases are nowhere near the best musicians that I know. They, you know, to me, there is a kind of something like, what do they call it? Emotional intelligence as it applies to talent that is really an important component in being able to get to some of this stuff. And, you know, when you're like really good at a really young age, that's like one of the worst things that can ever happen to anyone. And, you know, there are several really great examples of people who have transcended whatever those challenges are. I mean, immediately I'm thinking of Tony Williams, but lots of other guys too, you know, but there's a whole lot, way more people who were, you know, by all accounts, just the greatest fill in the blank at age 12 that, you know, that was pretty much it. And, so, you know, it's for me, it's always been hard, actually. You know, one thing that I remind people a lot of is that music is hard. I mean, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, coming up with something, you know, a few times is you know, something that's possible with a certain amount of ability or talent. But to really, you know, go deep into what music suggests, implies, and is one of the hardest possible ways to go through life. And at the same time, as, you know, we're talking here, it's one of the most incredibly rewarding ways to go through life, too.
Matheny's new album, Road to the Sun, is out now on BMG Records. If you have any Matheny-related thoughts or non-Matheny-related thoughts, drop us an email at subject-object-verb@artreview.com. We are pretty good emailers. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next month.